Monday night class is going to hear some things you heard Monday night. I'm going to try to cover them in a hurry. Physical things get in our way spiritually. And we don't have slides tonight, by the way. We're just going to get in the text and study an event that happened in the Bible that really, really was detrimental to Israel. It has to do with the temple. And by the time you get to Solomon, or to Jesus' day, that temple had become the most amazing, marvelous thing. And instead of worshiping and glorifying God, they worshiped and glorified the temple. What's Adam made of? You know that answer, don't you? Dust of the ground. He formed a man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils, and he became a living creature. Is that what it says? Doesn't sound right. You know, that's not the way I remember memorizing that or something. Now then, are you aware the animals were also made of the dust of the ground? Genesis chapter 2 says that he formed the animals of the dust of the ground. You've got to read it slow, and that's why we read the Bible so fast, so we can read the Bible through, you know, in 6 months' time or whatever. You got to slow it down to really see some things. Animals were made, and they were living creatures. Living creatures. Adam was a living soul. Got to get that. When God said, "Let us make man of the dust of the ground," God's a spirit. You know? And so animals don't have spirits. I'm aware of that verse in Ecclesiastes, and that's another whole study that the Jehovah's Witnesses talk about it. But what is death? The dust returns to the earth from whence it came. But the spirit, the soul, returned to God. Adam became a living soul. That's what he became. Now then, here's a concept that probably 15 years ago I would not have stated it this way. I would say Adam had a soul and a body. That's the way I've said it. Sam, that's the way you've grown up in the church, and that's the way you've heard it all your life. There's a whole lot better way of saying this. Here's Adam. Adam has a car. Adam has a house. There's Adam. Adam has a soul, and Adam has a body. Let's get the first one. Flip those backwards. Adam had a body, didn't he? But if Adam has a body and Adam has a soul, would you tell me who Adam is? He's a third entity out here. Isn't that amazing? Adam does not have a soul. Adam was a soul. He's a soul inside a body. When you die, you are a soul without a body. And that's really, really important in tonight's introduction to tonight's lesson, because it's the body and the soul that fight each other. You know, the Bible says they war against each other. That's in Galatians. That's what we're studying on Monday nights. And if you're not coming to Monday night class, you're missing some of the, well, I don't go deep. You miss it. If I ever get deep, we get deep there in that Monday night class. And that's what we were talking about. They war against each other, even the garden. Here's Satan. Satan, how on earth are you going to get to Eve and all of us? The only elements Satan has are here is 1 John 2:15 to 17. Here is all there is in the world. Three things: lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. Self-centeredness. Making my life good and better than everybody else's life. And that's all he has. Eve in the garden, what you do? There is that fruit. Your body wants it. You need of every tree in the garden, but here's the forbidden fruit. And Satan comes and said, can you eat of all of these trees? He knew the answer to that. He got her to verbalize, we can eat of every tree except that one tree. And he said, well, wonder why not? Wonder if she'd ever had that thought herself. What's so special about that tree? Wonder what it tastes like. Wonder what, you know, I've never had all of these fruit from all of these trees, and I've been going over all the gardens, and can you imagine how many different kinds of fruits there were just inside that one garden, you understand? And here they are gathering fruit and eating it every day. There's that tree. Lust of the flesh. She saw lust of the eyes. The major heart of our souls is our eyes. It's our senses. It's really the other part of it. But they are the wind of the soul. Jesus talks about the eye being single, having your eye focus on one thing. That's what you got to do. But here's the lust of the flesh. And so it would really be great. You look at it and you will be as wise as who? Wise as God. You want that? Isn't that amazing? And he came full load to bring sin into the world. Here's your flesh. Warring against that flesh in us is our soul. The soul wars against the flesh. And that's what every temptation is. Whoever looks on a woman to lust after her, or to look after her, you've heard it, hasn't said, thou shalt not commit adultery. Whoever looks on a woman has committed adultery already in his soul. How did all that happen? Lust of the eyes. The eye must be single, to use the terminology of the Sermon on the Mount. It's got to be focused. What's your purpose in life? And the flesh can give you every temptation that you want. And it's, you know, what is your, I remember the sin that doth so easily become us. I grew up in a little country church, and they said, everybody's got a becoming sin. And that was some terminology that West Huntsville there, that's terminology. What's your besetting sin? And so they'd say, well, here's my weakness. You know, the thing that I'm the weakest at is right here. This is my besetting sin. It's my becoming sin. How's that going to happen? Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, the pride of life. That's the only thing he's got. Jesus in the temptation. Turn these stones into bread. What does that appeal to? It's his flesh. How long since he'd been to McDonald's? You know that little drive-through, you know, you get that fast food? Was it Lonnie? Is Lonnie in here? No, Lonnie's not here. I think she was the one who was teaching the class, and she was talking about Jesus fasted 40 days. And the little child in the Sunday school class said he fasted, went without food. And he says, we fast food a lot. We go to McDonald's almost every other day. Fast food and fasting to a little three-year-old kid is different. He had fasted. No. He had not fast fooded, okay? He had fasted for 40 days. How hungry would you be? Lust of the flesh. He takes him to a high mountain. What does he do? You see all this? He showed him. And the third one is, He tempted Jesus to jump off the temple. That's pride. If you are the Son of God, jump off the temple. And then the devil quoted the Bible and misused a verse in the Bible, said he quoted a verse in the Bible, said the Lord will take care of you. And that's when Jesus said, you know, what he said in relationship to that. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes. Now, when it comes to being self-centered and having worth, how much money you got in the bank? Is that a measure of somebody? How old is your car? Isn't that amazing? How much education do you have? Are you still jogging? What's your golf handicap number? Who's your favorite football team and how do they do this year? Isn't that amazing? I'm better than you because my dog can beat up your dog and my big brother can beat up your big brother. That wasn't necessarily true about Mr. Perfect, but I had two sisters that could lay out anybody that bothered their little brother, and I'm talking about me. You understand? I'm better than you. Pride of life. Here's the danger. When God blesses us, the blessings become the focus. There is a verse, I had not even intended to use it. It's somewhere in Deuteronomy. I think it's chapter 8. There is a verse in Deuteronomy chapter 8 that says, whenever you go into this land, okay, let's see. Yes, chapter 8, verse 7. The Lord your God is bringing you into a good land and brooks of water and of fountains and springs that flow out of the valley and the hills, a land of wheat and barley, of vines and of fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive trees and honey, a land in which you will eat bread without scarcity, in which you will lack nothing, a land whose stones are iron and out of whose hill you can dig copper. When you have eaten these things, you shall bless the Lord your God. Beware that you do not forget the Lord, lest you say when you've eaten and you're full, you say when your herds are multiplied, when your heart is lifted up, he says, you will forget God who brought you into this land. What happened? What about spoiling a child? What about growing up with a silver spoon in your mouth? Isn't that amazing? What's that? If we're not careful, we will teach our children that the physical is all that matters. You got to be the best athlete in Little League. I'm not saying don't push your children. You don't misunderstand me. But there's something far, far greater than the secular things. And there's nothing in America that you watch on television that does not appeal to the fleshly side of you. How much you watch television? How much are you brainwashed? Do you turn it on to just have it on all day? You understand what I'm saying? What is that? You ever think about what are all these commercials about? You understand? Who are the important people? Who are the beautiful people? Who are the political people? All that matters is flesh, flesh, flesh. And flesh wars against the spirit. I love this church building. There's a danger. Dan, you'll appreciate this. I learned this years and years ago in Fiji in the beginning of that work. You don't need padded pews when you're sitting on a dirt floor on a straw mat. What's the church look like to you? See the difference? Communion. He could have put roast lamb up there to represent the Lamb of God. Under Judaism, that's what they had in the Passover. If he'd put roast lamb up there, if you like lamb, okay? Do you know what the Lord's Supper would have become? You know what happened in Corinth when they had the Lord's Supper? They turned it into a common meal. You understand? You understand what happened? It's all fleshly. Whenever I'm of Paul, I'm of Apollos, I'm of Cephas, I'm of Christ, my preacher's better than your preacher. My church building's nicer than your church building. You know, my church is friendlier than your church is. And all of these things, you understand? It's all fleshly. Now, we got to get to the lesson. Solomon is about to build the temple. And that's where we ended up last week. We're trying to cover three chapters a week. And Solomon asked God to give him all of this wisdom. And the Lord said, okay, I will give you these wisdom. And you have the wisdom of Solomon that is just magnified and just how wise he was. I believe there's a statement in chapter 3 that said he wrote 3,000 proverbs. How many of the 3,000 do we have? How many chapters in Proverbs? About 30? How many verses in each chapter? 25? We got 750 out of 3,000. Don't you wish you had the other 2,250? Isn't that amazing? And he wrote Proverbs about animals and about the birds. It's all in there. He was the wisest man that ever lived. He was known around the world. And so he's ready to build the temple. And we'll get to it next week, and that is the prayer of dedication. If you want to see Solomon, who is fleshly in so much of his life, how many wives did he have? You remember?
300 concubines.
Was it 700 wives? 700 wives and 300 porcupines, as a little child said in Sunday school. he's got 1,000 women. Is that fleshly? Yep. Why did he make those marriages? Political? Fleshly? And so God gets everything ready. When Solomon doesn't have to spend a lot of time getting ready, because David had already gathered all of the material, almost all the material that Solomon would use. In fact, the Lord tells David, is that back where? Where is that? Is that back? Now, I don't know if I'll be able to find that one. Go back to 2 Samuel. Is it about chapter 7 of 2 Samuel, whenever he tells David, or David calls Nathan the prophet and asks Nathan, can I build a house for God? David really, really wanted to build a house for God. Okay, let's see. David reigns, Mephibosheth, it's after that. I don't have to find it. David's further conquest. Oh, I sure thought it was in here. David and Bathsheba, I can't find it. It's early in 2 Samuel. It's before Bathsheba, I know that. Anyway, he gathered all the material, and he says, Nathan, can I build a house? Look at the house I'm living in, David says. And God's out here in a tent. I've got all of this money, I got all of this treasure. Should I build a house for God at 7.5 is where chapter 7, verse 5. I was right the first time, you know. I only thought I was wrong, so I really wasn't wrong. I was right all the whole time, right? Okay. Anyway, you've got David ready to build it. And he asked Nathan, you know what God, Nathan says? Go for it. Why? God deserves a house. You got all this money, got all this stuff. God deserves a house. Let's build a house. And the Lord comes to Nathan and gives him a second message. You get back to David and said, I've never asked for a house, and I've gone from tabernacle to tabernacle. We mentioned this last week. I've gone from one tabernacle to another. It wasn't that tabernacle they built out in the wilderness was they had it for 500 years until you get to Solomon ready to build the temple. He'd gone from tabernacle to tabernacle. And God says to Nathan, who says to David, have I ever asked for a house? Why? God is a spirit. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all of the spirit, body, soul, mind, and strength. There's a danger there. And so now, we're ready for Solomon to build the temple. The Lord says to David, you cannot build it. You're a man of war. You're going to have a son. Make sure you name him Peace. His name is Solomon, means peace. And so you read in this part of 2 Kings, and Solomon had rest and he had peace. He had peace like you could not imagine. Chapter 4, let's look at chapter 4. You got your Bibles open? We're going to skip a lot of that in chapter 4, at least the first 19 verses, because it reads like the begets. How long does it take you to read the begets? You know what I'm talking about, Matthew chapter 1? Yeah. Don't even pronounce the name. You don't read it out loud, you know. I doubt that you've ever read the begets out loud. You look at it and you just say, and that one, and that one, and that one, and that one. And so you got in the beginning of chapter 4, Solomon was king. And here are all of the men, and here they are, and here are all of their names. And now get to verse 20. Get beyond the begets. Judah and Israel were as numerous as the sands of the sea, eating and drinking, rejoicing. Solomon reigned over all the kingdoms from the river Euphrates to the land of the Philistines as far as Egypt. You got a map in the back? You got a mental picture of that? You know where Euphrates is? It's up there in Iran. You got to come to Iran, down through Syria, and down through Jordan, and then get down into the Promised Land, and get down to the land of Gaza, and then you get down to Egypt. He reigned over all of that, and it says they brought tribute and served Solomon all the days of his life. Solomon's provision for one day was 20 coors of flour, 60 coors of meal. That doesn't impress you. Can I read to you from what source you're going to look at? What about the Deaf Bible? Can I read you from the Deaf Bible? It's a Bible translation, third grade level, written for the deaf. Can I read you? Solomon's provision, I got the wrong Bible up there. I got the English Standard. I got the easy-to-read version. It's ERV if you're going to download that. Here's what it was. The amount of food that Solomon needed each day for himself, third grade level, you got it? You understand that? The amount that he had for a day for himself and everyone at his table, 150 bushels of flour. How many bushels of flour do you have in your house? You know the difference in a 2-pound stack and a bushel of flour? 150 bushels of fine flour, 30 bushels of flour, and 10 cattles that were fed grain, 20 cattles raised in the field, 100 sheep, wild animals like deer, gazelle, roebucks, and game birds. Does that impress you? As far as household.
One day.
He ruled over, verse 24, I'm still in the child's version, ruled over all the countries west of the Euphrates from the river to Gaza, and Solomon had peace on every border. During Solomon's lifetime, everybody in Judah and Israel, all the way from Dan to Beersheba, lived in peace and security. They were at peace, sitting under their own fig trees and their grapevines. Solomon had a place where he kept, and this is a little bit different from what you're reading. That's in verse 26. How many horses did he have in his, how many horses?
40,000.
How many?
40,000.
How many you got, Kara? How many horses you got?
I don't happen to have any.
Doesn't have that. 40,000 horses.
We have horsepower.
Isn't that amazing? Now, there's a difference in the Hebrew numbers, and sometimes the simple said 4,000, but keep it at 4,000. And he had 12,000 soldiers each month. One of the 12 district governors gave Solomon everything he needed for all the people who ate at the table. Everybody brought the grain. Verse 30, he was wiser than any man in the East. He was the wisest man on earth. Wisdom, wisdom. Can wisdom make you be filled up with pride? Yeah, that's education. That is the educational. I don't. Oh man! Don't tell me. We're not there. We're not there. Okay. Solomon's wealth and wisdom. Let me change back to the New King James translation. Solomon's wealth and wisdom exceeded, verse 30, all the wisdom of all of the men of the East and all the wisdom of Egypt. He was wiser than all men, and his fame was in all the surrounding nation. Here it is, 3,000 proverbs, songs were 1,005, and so he spake of trees, cedar trees, even to the hyssop that springs out of the wall. He spoke of animals and birds and creeping things and fish, and men of all nations came to hear the wisdom of Solomon. How fleshly is that? How fleshly is that? Temple construction. Ready to build the temple, got to have all that wood. Chapter 5, we covered chapter 4, it only took me 30 minutes. I thought I'd do it in 5. Hiram was a friend of David. But he not only knew David, he knew Solomon. And Solomon said to Hiram, "You know my father could not build a house because of the wars that he fought in on every side. Until the Lord put his foes under the sole of his feet. God's given me rest. I propose to build a house for the Lord." As he spoke to my father, "Your son, whom I will set on your throne, your place, he'll build a house. Now therefore," got to get those trees. We do not have any Jews who know how to cut down trees. Now that's not exactly what it says. The last part of verse 6, "You know there's none among us who has skill enough to cut the timber like the Sidonians." And so Solomon says, "I got enough money. I'll pay those people up there, your citizens in your kingdom, I will pay them to cut down. But," he said, "I'm going to send my servants up there to help you." Verse 9 says, "My servants will bring them from Lebanon to the sea. I will float them in rafts by the sea to the place you indicate to me and have them broken apart and then take them away, and you shall fulfill my desire by giving food for my household." And so he gave him all the seas that he wanted. Look at verse 13. Solomon raised up a labor force, 30,000 men. He sent them to Lebanon. Lebanon, what do they do? They were there for a month up there and 2 months at home. He had 70,000 men who carried burdens and 80,000 who quarried the stones. You remember Jesus? Not one stone of this temple would be left upon another. Those stones were put there by King Herod, and some of them weighed 20 tons. One number, Chuck, that I've read, they weighed 40 tons each. Massively huge. And when Jesus says, "Not one stone will be left upon another," The king commanded them, commanded them, verse 17, to quarry the large stones, costly stones, hewn stones, laid the foundation. And so, came to pass, chapter 6, here's your key verse. If you don't know this is in the Bible, you need to mark it so you'll know where it is. 480 years after they came out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign, in the second month, they started to build the temple. There's your time marker. If you're drawing a timeline, you know, they came out of Egypt exactly 430 days to the day from the time that they went down into Egypt. That's from that period of time. Anyway, he says, so he builds the temple. Look at verse 7. And the temple, when it was built with stones finished at the quarry. I want you folks in construction. Chuck, you're the only one I know that's in construction. There's some others who are here involved in construction. Had 70,000 over there cutting the stones so that no hammer or chisel or any iron tool was heard when the temple was being built. He's pretty smart, doesn't he? He knows how to do it. And then you've got the description of it and all of this. Verse 28, and he overlaid the cherubims with gold. He made carvings. And the last verse, we don't have time to read all of this. He was 7 years in building it. The Bible in Chronicles said 153,000 men worked for 7 years. I'm telling you, somebody in making the list of the seven wonders of the ancient world missed one. I mean, you read this. Chuck, you're in construction. You read this. Let me tell you what you do, Chuck. Let me tell you. Go to YouTube and find a video, 10-minute video of Solomon's temple. It will blow your mind. That video will just astound you whenever they show, you know, not a cartoon, but using artificial intelligence, they show you the construction of that temple. Absolutely amazing. How big was the temple? Well, it was twice as big as the tabernacle. They had two doors to get into it. Massively huge, two doors. How tall were the doors? Well, Solomon's temple, Moses' temple was 10 cubits, that's 15 feet. Those doors were twice that, 30 feet. Chuck, what's the distance up here? Is that 25? How many of me can you stand on top of me till you get to the top? That'd be a good way to figure it. I don't know. I don't think it's 30. You think it's 30? Okay. Okay. Yeah, I want you to think of that. That's the how tall those doors were. And they're massive and huge. You read this and you try to imagine it. That's why YouTube, next time you go to Fiji, show them a video. I don't know if I can get YouTube, many of them cannot, but carry on your laptop that thing off of YouTube showing it. Scott, you've done a lot of construction and everything. You read this and you look at that, it will absolutely astound you. And we don't have time. We've run out of time, and all we can talk about is the physical side of it. And that's the wrong side. That's the wrong side. Jesus' day, swear not at all. You can swear by the temple and you're not bound. I lay my hand on the Bible. In the name of God, I promise, I swear by the holy place and the most holy place where God dwells that I'll do it. And what they say doesn't count at all. But if you say, I swear by the gold in that temple, you're under oath. Is that physical? I swear by the holy sacrifices that are there on that altar, Day of Atonement, blood of bulls and goats carried in to sprinkle to make atonement for sin. You can swear by the animals that are on the temple. Put your hand and swear in the name of God as holy. I swear based as truthfully as you can be, believe in these animals. I'll do it. Doesn't count. But if you swear by the physical altar, you're bound. What's the danger? What's worship like? Fleshly or spiritual? Unleavened bread and not roast lamb. Singing and making melody with the most beautiful vocal cords there are. God is a spirit, and they that worship Him must worship Him physically and in truth. Worship is to bow the heart before God. I got to thinking one time, I was out weeding the gardens, I got 2 minutes, and I heard about churches that they didn't want to use instrumental music. They said, oh no, we could not use instrumental music, you know, because that's not the way New Testament church, even as Catholicism, there was no instrumental music for 1,500 years. Isn't that amazing? Had it in the Old Testament, had it in paganism, when the church came along for 1,500 years with all of these cathedrals. No instrumental music. And so we come along, well, let's give microphones to the best singers in the church. And so I thought, who's the best tenor we've got in the church? Let's find the guy that sings tenor the best. Who's the best bass that we have? I don't know. I always love to hear Jerry Hopkins sing tenor. Didn't you? Those of you who sat when Jerry, Chuck, I used to love to hear your dad sing bass. You know, to sit around him when we'd have a singing at somebody's house, most melodious bass voice you've ever heard. Chuck, I've heard you when I've sat beside you up there on the pew up there. Now, you got a great voice, too. It's not as good as your dad's, I'm sorry. But you understand? Who's the best soprano? Who would we give mics to? Wait a minute. You know what I'm talking about? Physical. Here's a teenager. Didn't grow up in the church. He's really struggling with his life. He can't carry a tune in a tape recorder, you know, or on his cell phone. I guess I'd better get modern enough. He can't record it on the... And he starts singing. Here's this woman that used to have been one of the altos of sopranos, and now her voice just cracks, and it's just all over the place when she's trying to sing, and everybody's laughing and pointing at her, because whenever she sings, it just cracks, and when it gets way up high and everything, it's the most aggravating thing you'd ever hear. How's it sound to God? Who's got the best? Who are the best singers in the church? Totally changed my understanding of the best singers in the church. It's the heart. Best preacher in the church. Best Bible class teacher. The best this, the best that. Who's the prettiest woman in the church? You understand? Who dresses the nice? Who's got the nicest car out there? Don't you wish you had that? You understand? Folks, we don't have a soul. We are a soul. And it is this soul and its relationship to God. And that is the only thing that matters. And if you want to learn the worth of a physical building, go to Fiji. And hear those Fijian brethren who sing angelically, as far as I'm concerned, writing their own music. They don't know, well, they, you know. It's the most beautiful singing you've ever heard, sitting on a dirt floor. Why? Their spirit is singing. Who's the best organ player in the church? They fuss over who's going to be. Who's going to sing the solo in the church choir? What's that? Physical, physical, physical. Guys, we are a soul. And it is that soul that belongs to God. That's it. I could keep going, but that's a stopping place.